Welcome to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Malcolm Gahlia. We're going to be talking about plot and character development. So, Malcolm, how do your stories actually come to you?
Well, I work full-time in writing, so basically you just kind of, you just have to be always open to stories. You just have, I've got my notebook with me, and sometimes you just think of something and you write down. Sometimes you're in a situation in life, and you say, I wonder if things could have gone differently. What would happen? And sometimes it's like material for a story. For example, I was reading a news story about a nurse who was on her wedding day, and as she was going to her wedding day, she was going to the church, there was a car accident. And she worked on an ambulance. She was that kind of paramedic nurse. So she jumped out in full bridal regalia, and she saved someone's life. That was a news story. And I think, what if an actor did that? Like, an actor is doing a play, and someone's choking, and they gave him the Heimlich, and they filmed it, and they were world famous because of that. So you just say, okay, I'm going to write a story about that now. Okay. You know, so you just always open to stories, to ideas, and then the craft comes with actually developing them.
So how do you go about developing? Do you make up stories about people as you see them, and that builds a character for something later on, or how do you develop your character?
Everyone has their own ways. I tend to be plot driven. I plot, in my case, usually plot comes first and then character. This play, in fact, which I'm writing right now, which I've just finished writing, is the first time I ever wrote a character driven piece. Usually I work with plot, and once I have my ideas, I just squeeze into the plot. I'm quite a formulaic person. I like the science of writing. I budget page counts before I even start. So because I work professionally, I work full time, I don't have time to you need to look at the fee you're receiving.
Yes.
And if something's going to take you, like, to write a play, if you've been commissioned to write a play, if it's going to take you 6 months to write it, it won't do at all. And for the people who are waiting for it, and also the fee you get is not worth 6 months' work. So you plan meticulously. So even you budget your page counts, you don't overwrite, and then you end up cutting. If you overwrite, there's a long editing process. You know, so you just, from the very beginning, and you notice with many plays, especially when you read someone who didn't plan a play properly, you can tell because it's got a tapering effect. The first few scenes are like, the first scene is like 12 minutes long. The second scene is 15 minutes long. Then the last few scenes are like half a page. And they just taper off as the person got bored. But if you plan it, you say, okay, the first page is at 15 minutes. And the last page is 40 seconds. The last scene is 40 seconds. That doesn't feel right at the planning stage. Let me change it now. Well, so I'm quite meticulous. So I start with the story, I flesh it out, and then I just bullet points. This bullet point will roughly take me about a page and a half. This is quite detailed. So I do stray from that once I start, but it's quite a scientific process. It's quite as in mathematical.
So do you sort of diarize, today I'm writing
pretty much, yes.
Act one, or whatever?
That's how you just, it's writing is not an art, it's a craft. That's how I see it. It's a playwright, you know, W-R-I-G-H-T, is like a cartwright or whatever, or shipwright. You make things. You know, it's a craft. You're building something. So and then when it actually comes to putting it together, I like to use the 8 sequence structure, which they use in movies. It works really well for stories. We basically have, your story has 3 acts. Mm-hmm. Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. Act 2, the middle is twice as long, so you split that into 2A and 2B.
Okay.
Yeah. So each act has 2 sequences. So 2 sequences in Act 1, 2 sequences in Act 2A. 2 sequences in 2B, and 2 sequences in 3, that's 8 sequences in all. And you just kind of like, then obviously the craft comes with how to hide the seams, as it were. You know, you don't want people to notice, here's a sequence, a new sequence has just started. You need to hide them, you need to kind of blur them in. But I find that it's convenient, it's a tool by which you can write effectively, an entertaining narrative, and also write quickly, which is important when you do it full time and you're playing for your kids' private school through writing.
Do you actually then start literally at the very beginning with your first line in sort of page one, and you go from there, or do you sometimes start in the middle, or
rarely?
No, you start at the beginning.
But I plan it out. Mm-hmm. I plan it all out. So if I give myself like a month to write like a panto, for example, mm-hmm. you know, or something else, but like a month or 6 weeks, I would spend about half that time of just planning.
Okay,
I wouldn't write anything. Yes, about half a month just planning. So basically, you have your ingredients and you make your recipe. You're creating the recipe. Then the other half, you're actually cooking. You just follow the recipe. You can deviate a bit. You can add some cinnamon, you know. But it's still the same thing that you planned. You can't go too far off, especially at the beginning. If you change too much in the first act, then it's going to have massive repercussions all throughout. But you can change the ending. halfway through.
So it doesn't happen that you know, as you're developing your character, you sort of meet them in your head, whatever, that they turn into somebody or they react.
I study the characters before, and I have pictures of them, I find pictures of what they look like, I get to know them, I know how old they are, I know things about them that the audience doesn't need to know. You know, I know if they have sisters, I know if they had childhood trauma, I know all these things. But even character development, there's also, I use like psychological, what psychiatrists use to say the extroverts and introverts. You have the people open to experience new experience. You have the anxious people, the ones who are at peace. An interesting character is basically like a spectrum of like when zero is the lowest, mm-hmm. like zero is like an introvert and 100 is an extrovert, or a zero is somebody who's very helpful and 100 is someone who's very not helpful, right? All the characters, all the interesting, memorable characters that you ever heard of will be extreme in one form or another. Everything you see. Every character. Okay. If you see Friends, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, all the characters, the girls of Sex and the City, who have the same characters as the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, actually. It's all formulaic. You know, it's full formulaic. There's the party one, there's the clever one, there's the leader, and there's the one who's a little bit sexy and quite off. The rebel, you know.
Which ninja turtle is that? Sorry,
that's Raphael.
Okay,
the red one. Yeah, he's always say sexy, but he's a rebel. Yeah, well, he might be sexy, I guess. I don't know if you're into that. Anthropomorphic turtles, they when they do it for you. There's also a good guide is by a psychiatrist who actually was a consultant for the film Inside Out. And Inside Out uses emotions and literally has the character types in there. But every character you see is usually like. Extroverts are easier to write than introverts. It's very difficult to write a story where an introvert makes, especially visual. For books, I think it'd be interesting for books. For books, might not be so difficult because you can write what they're thinking.
Explain, yes.
In a play, not so much. But there are many characters who are introverted. But in a movie, for example, Amelie is an introverted character, one of the rare ones. Also, a character who's very relaxed is not too common because they're very hard to write. A neurotic character is more fun, easier to write. But a character like the dude in The Big Lebowski, he's very relaxed. He's at peace. It usually takes a huge catalyst to set those characters in motion.
Right.
So it takes a big thing for him. And it's not just him. He's got a friend who's the mental opposite, which is in which he does that. Very often when you have friends in stories, if you have a conscientious, goody-two-shoes person, they'll have a slobby friend who's always getting into trouble. In real life, it might not work that way. I think people tend to stick with people who are like them in real life. But in stories and narrative, it's just much more interesting. Narrative is not like real life. Your aim as a writer isn't to make something, you don't write what is true, you write what is believable.
Okay.
If it's actually quite out there, but you can make it believable, that's fine. A lot of things are not real. For example, in The Biggest Lie, when you write a story, is that you have a character as an arc. They start one way, they end somewhere else. In real life, grown-ups don't change. That's proven. You know, if someone's an introvert and very shy, and they're in their 20s already, they might... Something might happen to them that makes them break out, like Sandy in Greece. But at the slightest sign of trauma in real life, they'll revert right back to their comfort zone.
Okay.
You know, but in stories, these things don't happen. So yeah, there's an entire theory behind it.
So do you have in your office? Is it literally like as I imagine, Miss Marple? You know, they're always having a picture and bullet points about the character, and you've got the plot line and what's going to happen next. Do you have visual guides?
Yeah, visual guides, lots of post-it notes. I like to handwrite. I like to have things handwritten, so I like to cross things off, mm-hmm. like physically, you know, and have them all. And then when I start writing, once I've planned it, I do start from the beginning. But then since I've planned it all, if I'm stuck in a scene, I know what should have happened in that scene, in that particular sequence. Okay. I know how long it should be, so I can just skip to the ones that is more fun to write. And then once I've done the whole thing, I'll go back and do the things which I was stuck in. And then it's much easier to write. When you write something, I find it has a kind of inertia. The closer you get to the end, the faster it comes out.
Uh-huh.
I use something else to describe it, but it's quite vulgar. And it's toilet humor.
And so, it's a daytime program.
Yeah. But the closer you get to the end, the its own inertia kind of pulls it out. It's just easier and quicker to write. Yeah.
Do you get anxious at all when you're getting to the end, or are you now such a pro that
writing is not just writing, it's a lot of planning and you have to also do a lot of researching and things like that. The actual writing, I try to limit to as short a time as possible because I get broody and kind of really moody and stuff and quite not very nice to be around. It's kind of like you're pregnant. when you're writing. It's true. That's all you can think about. And
I'm
not really a good multitasker. So if I'm writing, I do eat rubbish. If I'm at 2 a.m. writing away, I'll take regular breaks to raid the fridge. But I'm not really good at multitasking. So when I get into something, I like OCD immerse myself into something.
Yeah.
So it's good sometimes it is a bit of a relief when a draft is finished and it's passed on.
So you can't really run over your time. Like you said, you probably have more work lined up anyway. So you have to switch off that play.
I do hand stuff in, I would say, like 99% late all the time. I'm not a lot, but what I do is I organize early deadlines. Mm-hmm. I arrange for early deadlines so that when I, because that's a big motivator to get things done. When you have a big, fat, hairy deadline cropping up, you know, when you have actors who are about to rehearse your play, or you've been commissioned to write a play and you see that tickets are already being sold,
and you haven't finished
for the
play,
which will be like 6 months from now, and you have to work on it. So yeah, you know, I don't really do panic, but it is a nice because there's just so many projects to work on, so you prioritize whichever one is in your face right now.
And do you end up sort of changing scripts and things, literally as the days lead up to the play opening?
Well, that's not so much. You need to trust in your original. I do write several drafts. I would, and now, especially the older I'm getting, the more change there is from one draft to the next. There's quite a bit. These last couple of years I've been really experimenting with just changing things. But you need to trust in the, especially with comedy. I specialize mostly in comedy. And comedy, first time all the actors read it, everyone laughs and they laugh. And then about four or five weeks into rehearsals, nothing's funny anymore. So you can lose your bottle. You know, you can lose your nerve and say, oh, this isn't funny anymore. The audience is going to hate it. But you need to, and people and cast members will actually tell you, this isn't actually as fun as I thought it was. But you need to trust that original instinct. You just need to kind of like, you know, stay the course sometimes and just, and then you change small things. Even once it goes out, if the audience don't enjoy a particular scene or they don't laugh at this particular joke, you just replace it or move it.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week, Malcolm Gallia. We're talking about plot and character development. So yourself, obviously a playwright and a writer in general, but also an actor. So have you learned as you've gone along? Do you sort of curse writers because they do certain things in plays that you then act in, or is that taught you any lessons at all?
I find it helpful as an actor, because when you read a script, you don't very much often an actor just sees his line and see how he fits in the script. But you know, when I look at a script holistically now, what did the writer mean by this? Mm-hmm. And there's a line that doesn't make sense to me. I wouldn't just say it because it's written. I'll try and understand what the writer meant by this, the context of the whole play. But I'm primarily a writer, so acting kind of supplements. I work full-time in theatre, so I write, I act, I produce, I direct. But primarily I write. Everything else is to help me with the writing, even the backstage stage managing back in the day. And yes, it helps me as an actor because I can understand the writer better. Usually depends who the writer is. But mostly it helps me as a writer because I've noticed that a well-written script is easier to learn, to memorize, because it just makes sense. You're talking, you're saying lines that just follow naturally. Okay. There's not these non sequiturs, you know. It just follows lines, and they're fun to say. And also, I've been on the other side of the theatre bit, and everyone wants a fun character to play. So by being an actor, sometimes I don't know which character I might play one of these characters one day. So I try to make sure that every character I write is rewarding to play in some way. You know,
and so that's not necessarily the number of lines. It might be the funnier lines or the character themselves.
Even the funnier lines, even just the complexity of the character sometimes can be. And complex characters are not very easy to write because they're realistically complex. You know.
And do you like certain characters, and then when you see them on stage, you dislike them, or someone's interpretation,
Yes, changes. All the time. Well, in fact, I do prefer to, especially the first time a project is a stage, I like to direct it myself. I would love to find a director that I love to work with who can just read my work and get it, and I can just stay home and not leave the house and just write and never have to talk to people or just stay inside. That'd be great. But I'll never have to get into traffic or anything. But until then, I'd love to work with a director who can actually just see my work and understand it. So far, there isn't. Although there are actors who I cast, and I know this actor, he or she will require no direction because they know my work, and they will they'll know. But very often, directors come with their own vision, regardless of what the actual work is. So sometimes. Until then, and it's possible for a director to do a bad job with a Shakespeare play, and no one blames the writer, but if it's possible to mess up a Shakespeare play, it's entirely probable to mess up a Malcolm Gallia play. So just the first time it's done, I like to direct it. If people want to direct it afterwards, it's fine, as long as the first time round, then that way people won't blame the script.
And do you sometimes base your characters on people you know, or on an actor's particular skills?
On an actor's skills almost all the time. Like, for example, for pantomime, I don't even begin writing until after the auditions.
Okay.
I audition because it's pointless writing a role for a 6 foot blonde girl with comic timing and then trying to find someone to play the role. Mm. But if someone like that happens to show up at auditions, great, I'll write a part for her. You know, okay. or for an overweight Russian with a bald head. You know, that's great. If someone shows a vision, I'll write a role for them. And if they have a good attitude and a strong work ethic, great. So very often I do that. I base characters on people I know. I think every character I write is based on someone. In fact, very often when I first have the character pictures, I might find random pictures of people on the internet, but quite often, more often than not, they're actually people I know. They'll never see the character description, but so I can loosely base on.
I'm going to get your office broken into now. So, hold you to ransom. Mm. Your favourite play that you've written?
I don't know. I mean, it's like...
Like everyone?
It's like saying, which is your favourite kid that you have, you know?
That's so easy.
Yeah. So, my favourite play is generally the one I'm currently working on at the moment, you know, so... That's pretty much it. Right now, I'm working on the pantomime for December.
Oh, already?
Yeah, we start quite early. We start from June. Did on the first draft about July for that. yeah, and just in May, I had my commission, Marty was a multi/English play about partner swapping in Gozo.
Okay, so, that would have been fun.
It was fun because I was a commission. I was asked, I was given the title and I was given the subject matter. But then it was up to me to, you know, characterization, everything. And that was an interesting experience.
Is there a play that you've sort of got on your back shelf that you haven't finished, or, you know, something you want to do for yourself but isn't a commission, it's just something
tons of those. Yes. Mm. I've got a play called Revenants, which I had out in 2010, which I would like to rework. Then there's other ideas I have, which I'm gonna hold on to them until I'm a better writer. I don't trust myself to pull off just yet. You know, but yeah, quite a few. I'm writing, and right now I don't get a lot of time to write my own projects because I work on commissions. People just ask for stuff, and right now I'm focusing quite a lot on writing screenplays for cinema,
local cinema, so Maltese films.
Not so much. I just like writing them and maybe selling them. Okay. And I don't really mind what happens with them. I just started writing screenplays. Maybe a year or so ago when I had my first screenplay, 20,000 Reasons, yes. Just came out in February. And it was really fun. It was really good fun writing a screenplay. I liked the process. You have a lot less responsibility than theatre.
Because it's not live?
It's not live. Also, it's a lot less your own project. People have, you know, there's a lot of people involved. Mm-hmm. Whereas with theatre, you have that responsibility that actors don't change a syllable, you know. Okay. So, but I just enjoyed screenwriting as well. It's a nice discipline. It's a bit easier than writing for theatre as well. So just keeping them both.
Bubbling. Yeah. So how did you actually start? So take me right back to the beginning of your writing career. How did you begin?
I started writing like plays and sketches while I was a student here at the university. And we used to act for companies like the MADC, you know, doing roles, yeah. Pantos, and our first play was Grease in 1998.
I love Grease.
Yeah. And I started writing like sketches for a students' festival over here on campus and things like that. And then when I graduated, I gave myself a year to try this writing thing. And if it goes well, I'll keep it for another year before I get a real job. And I'm still on my probation period, you know, like since 13 years later. So then that year in 2003, there was the MADC One Act Play Festival. I wrote myself a 40-minute play, and I directed it. I said, let's see how it goes. And it went well. We won best production and things for that year. And I was asked to write the pantomime that year in 2003, and I did. And I just kept writing one more project. And now I can't, like, stop because it just... Too many people want stuff, you know.
So the play normally it takes like a month now to write, or
it varies. Sometimes I would plan it and then I would write it and then just leave it there to kind of ferment, you know, and then you attack it again, you know. But you don't write one play at a time.
You juggle writing plays as well.
Well, so you write one, then just kind of leave it there, and then you work on another one. Then you go back to the one we wrote before, and you spruce it up, do a second draft, and you send it on its way.
Okay.
Then you go back. So there's always, you don't kind of write one. So you do fully immerse yourself in the one you're writing, but it's a pre-process, like 2 or 3 weeks, and it's out. And you start on another one.
It would be quite fun, actually, to shuffle some papers then.
Shuffle
some papers and you have half play. So yeah, it starts as one half and finishes it. There's probably a movie already.
Yeah, and once I start, it's a quick process. I don't like to like write a scene this month and another scene next month.
Yeah,
it's all planned. It's just knocked off. And even like writer's block and things like that. You don't. I don't remember getting that because you just plan.
You just
what you need to do.
Work through it, write through it.
I just plan. And again, artists get writer's blocks. Craftsmen, you know, cabinet kitchen makers don't get kitchen maker blocks because you know what you have to do. You planned it. And it's a craft, you know, so you just plan it. And I don't have the luxury to write when I feel in my heart that I need to write. I write what people want, which is fine. That's great.
Yes,
I mean, I'd love to be in that position. But I write what people want me to write. And I write when I have free say. People just say, write a play like Ziggo Zag Festival. Write a play, whatever you like. Sometimes I get that. I'm still constrained to write a play which I think the audience would like, and a play that I can perform over and over and over again for several years, like The Complete History of Malta, you know.
That's such fun,
you know, it's a play which we did first in 2011, and we did it last like a week ago. We just keep doing it all the time, and then we did The Complete History of Europe, Everything You Need to Know About Science. These are plays which you do all the time consecutively. Like, so you're always constrained, but I do enjoy it, and I think I'd be lost if someone had to tell me just there's no limits, just write whatever you like. I think I would feel a little bit. I do need.
If somebody gave you a year off though with a budget and said, or no budget in fact, you know, you'll have whatever you need, would you be able to then finish a couple of your projects? And are they plays or are they film?
Probably
film.
Well, the thing is, if I write a film, I'm fairly certain I can get produced with a play. But a film, I don't know. I'm still starting out. So if I wrote a film, I need to go through the entire process of getting the script vetted and doctored, and then you enter competitions. Then if you win competitions, then you pitch it. If you don't win competitions at all, then you get rid of it and you work on another one. That's the whole thing. The more you write, you have a kind of a pretty thick skin. Sometimes when people, we can tell people just wrote their one play or one project, and if you criticize something, they go to pieces. And no, I'm not like that at all.
Not precious at all.
I don't even remember sometimes what I wrote 3 years ago. I'll be reading it again and I get really depressed. Oh my God, I was so good 3 years ago.
Do you ever get sometimes surprised that, hey, I wrote that. I wrote that.
I should be getting better, not worse.
So you do have the occasional off day.
All the time, and it's I wouldn't recommend this lifestyle to anybody. It's full of self doubt and you're questioning yourself all the time, and self loathing and all kinds of
it's not.
I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
But do you ever read anybody else's plays and think, did they get this published? How is this on stage? Do you sometimes see massive holes in things and think, oh, I could have done this so much better. I wish to.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, quite. Yeah. But then sometimes, very often, I see things like, oh my God, this is wonderful. I wish I wrote this. You know, and that's always my aim, to write something that when I watch it, I'll say, if this wasn't mine, I would wish that I wrote this. You know,
you want someone to plagiarize, sort of.
yeah. And I plagiarize myself all the time. You know, sometimes if I do a project which doesn't take off, I'll literally strip it apart like a mechanic would strip down a car, and like, oh, this joke works, and I'll put this somewhere else. Yeah, so you kind of cannibalize your work.
And is it important to you to keep your work close to your chest before it actually gets aired in public?
This is quite a common trait, I suspect, in Malta. No, not like that. No, I talk about my stuff. If I'm working on something, I find it easier to just tell people about it, be it a social gathering. By the end of it, everyone will know about what the project I'm working on right now. I think it's also a form of safeguarding it, because by telling people my ideas, people can't use them because I've kind of
copyrighted it.
I've said it in public, yes. and if they're gonna go and quickly use my ideas in a, I'm already half done. I don't talk about ideas I have for one day, whatever I'm working on right now. Yeah, because the play's commissioned already, it's in rehearsal, so I'm just doing rewrites. Yeah, people. In fact, I'm worried about listening to other people's ideas because people tell me
an idea.
Don't
want to get influenced. And
yeah, sometimes you might. Sometimes I tell you of an idea that you've already thought of, so suddenly I can't use that anymore. And sometimes just some people might just tell you an idea, and then a few years later, when I'm thinking of something, I might accidentally, my subconscious brain might bring this up, and I might think it's my idea, you know, which is horrible, you know. So because you it's never happened before. But I'm very wary when people come and tell me to share their ideas with me. I'll make sure that this it's all well documented. It's in an email, you know, so I will always remember that this is
referred back to. Yeah. So, is there any favorite plays that you have? Any favorite books that you have that you may have wished to have write?
Oh yeah, well, there's there's many lovely plays. Next year, I'm directing She Stoops to Conquer for the MADC, which is such a wonderful piece. Yes. It's like from the 1700s. It's so old and it's so well written. And this guy wrote it in a quill or something, you know, and not even a laptop in a cafeteria. And it's such a beautiful piece. She Stoops to Conquer. It's a lovely piece. And there's a lot of modern day plays. Martin McDonagh writes beautifully, and he didn't go to learn how to write. I think all his best works he wrote when he was like 23, like in that year.
Annoying.
You know, it's just disgusting. And he just wrote the Pillow Man and the Lieutenant of Inishmore. It's so dark, so brutal, and so funny. You know, the Lieutenant of Inishmore. You have a scene where a man's being tortured, and it's hilarious. The man's hanging upside down, and another man is torturing him. And he gets a phone call from his dad because his cat is sick, and the guy being tortured is trying to sympathize with him to get his good books. It's just so funny. I mean, who thinks of that?
So is this something we can see on a local stage soon?
Martin McDonagh. I don't know. The Pillow Man was performed for sure, but the Lieutenant of Inishmore. It's also quite Irish. It's got to do a lot with Irish political. So might not be as relevant. Yasmina Reyes is another great writer. Art and The God of Carnage, two very, very good things. Yeah, just so much stuff. And books, I didn't do it for the commercial things. I go for what?
The bestseller type of list.
Yeah, well, people are reading these books. Yeah. There's a reason why people read these books. You know, there's a reason why people read Harry Potter. It's because they speak to the mentality of the consciousness. And I really enjoyed. I remember the Time Traveler's Wife. The concept behind it and the story. Oh my goodness! And the end when she's in her 80s and she sees him appear to her and she's it's mind blowing.
Just a beautiful one.
Yeah.
Well, I'd really like to thank you, Malcolm, for coming in to speak to us today. So that was Malcolm Gahlia talking to us on What's the Story. Do join us again next week for some more about writing your own play or book. Thank you.